This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We are slated to hear from Dr. Rebecca Gee. She's the Secretary of Health and Hospitals for the state of Louisiana. Dr. Gee will talk about the influenza outbreak in our state. Also, the opioid crisis and budget woes that are affecting the state's largest agency and where we're going from here with money tight. Also, we'll visit with Mary Stein and Samantha Belmont from the East Baton Rouge Parish Library System. They'll talk about what's happening with the library, including the big construction project downtown, but also the first ever Mid-City MicroCon, which is this Saturday, and the One Book, One Community launch party celebrating Hidden Figures, which will be later this month. Mary Stein, Samantha Belmont, and Dr. Rebecca Gee coming, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757, locally 297-5633. You can always send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. Dr. Rebecca Gee is our guest to begin, and we'll spend some time with her. And if you'd like to talk with the person who heads the state's largest agency, this is your opportunity. Dr. Gee is Secretary of the Department of Health and Hospitals, largest agency, a budget that is $14 billion at last count. About half of the state's annual spending goes to this agency, and it is one of, if not the most important entities in state government. And it's always a pleasure to catch up with Dr. Rebecca Gee. Good morning.
Jim, good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you. And with this budget uncertainty, how does that affect you?
Well, I mean, more importantly, it affects the people of the state and really, you know, first of all, I think we're going to have a solution. That what we're proposing, just because we have to cut so much, none of us want to live with. Even the most conservative fiscal hawks do not want these things to happen. So if we were to have to cut $2.4 billion out of our budget, it would drastically reduce the number of people who could stay in nursing homes, you know, taking away the funding that they get that allows them to get their care. We would lose the long-term personal care services program, which helps 14,000 elderly people stay in their homes. We would have to end the pediatric day health care program. We'd virtually eliminate any mental health services. Of course, as you know, we're in the middle of an opioid addiction crisis where people are overdosing and dying. So this is just, these are things that we should not do. No one wants to live with these cuts. And you know, in the past, when we presented even much minor cuts to the legislature, they've have said we don't want to do that. So we're going to have to come up with a better solution than this. But now, just because my budget is such a large part of the budget, and we've really eliminated over the past few years the things that we were doing that we did not think were necessary, we're really down to cutting into bone. We don't have any more fat or muscle.
Now, 2 years ago when you took office, Governor Edwards was touting Medicaid expansion, as were you, and it happened. And now the claim is that 435,000 of our citizens are newly insured under the expansion. That is largely federal money, but would it be affected by the budget chaos that's ongoing?
No, I mean, in the sense that we're not going to eliminate the Medicaid expansion. The Medicaid expansion has brought billions of new dollars to our state, has covered hundreds of thousands of people. We, because of the Medicaid expansion, getting a better federal match. So with Medicaid dollars, you put in a little state money, you get federal money back. With the Medicaid expansion, we get a lot more federal money back, and it's virtually a free program. We have to pay the most 10% of the overall cost. Normally, we pay about, you know, 30 or more cents on the dollar on that cost. So this is a good deal for us, and we will not be ending the Medicaid expansion, but it will eliminate our other programs, as I mentioned, for the disabled, for the elderly, for children, for mental health. And these things are not part of the Medicaid expansion, but are very, very important services that the state provides.
How closely were you following the congressional, in particular the U.S. Senate vote on the Affordable Care Act? It would have seemed that Medicaid expansion in Louisiana and other states under the Affordable Care Act would have been in peril. What did you think of the chaos that was going on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think that Americans are very clear that they want some relief on their insurance premiums. Insurance premiums premiums are too high, the cost of health care is too high. We can all agree on that, that we need solutions. But what was being discussed on the Hill and failed, and it's looking like these conversations are not going to be picked up again this year, which we're very grateful about, is overturning the Medicaid expansion. What the Congress learned was that the Medicaid expansion is very popular. It's popular with Republicans. It's popular with Democrats. Most people in our state approve of it. And that's something I don't think they're going to tinker with again. I really don't, Jim. I think they need to get onto the real issue, which is the overall cost of health care. And that absolutely needs to be addressed.
As we know, we've had previous secretaries of health in Louisiana who are not doctors, but you are a doctor, an obstetrician, and gynecologist. Does that help when you're assessing the needs of people from a medical standpoint?
Absolutely, Jim. I continue to see patients. I also have been a patient. You and I have talked that I was in an accident and spent several months in a wheelchair myself, so I understand what it's like to have to struggle with a health condition. I've lost my first husband in an accident. So I've been in an emergency room. I've been in an ICU. I've also cared for patients in an emergency room and cared for patients in an ICU. So I try to bring that caregiver's perspective to the decisions I make, you know, including these cuts, frankly. I mean, we're cutting things that you hear and they're terrible, but we, you know, first focus on how do we make sure to promote the health of the maximum number of people and don't do anything that, you know, similar, you know, for something example would be hospice or dialysis. Those are the kinds of things that were put up by prior secretaries. And if you're not a doctor, you may not know, you know, if you don't have dialysis mm-hmm. for a day, you could die. You know, so, you know, sometimes I have to bring that perspective to the budget. I bring it to our policy priorities. But I do think it's helpful.
A listener, Tracy, asked about the comment that I made earlier about Medicaid, the expansion being largely funded by the federal government. Tracy wants to know how much of it is at the federal government responsibility as far as paying for the cost of it.
Yeah, it's 95 cents on the dollar. So it was 100 cents on the dollar, so fully covered, then 97, then 95. It goes down to a minimum of 90. So it's a good deal for the state. We get most of it paid for by the federal government.
So right now it's 95 cents?
Correct.
Okay. Meaning the federal government pays 95 cents and the state pays a nickel. But it's such a big program that even a nickel is a substantial amount of money. And I guess that's why some people, including Treasurer Kennedy, now Senator Kennedy, have taken aim at this. But you're saying it's a good investment.
Well, remember that these people were getting care before they were going to emergency rooms, though. And when they went to an emergency room, the state was covering the full cost of their care. You know, there is a legal obligation, a law called EMTALA, that you have to, you know, preserve and protect people's lives. So, you know, that we were spending money on health care, but it was unwise. It was not primary care. It wasn't prevention. I mean, we've done tens of thousands of mammograms and colonoscopies. We've saved lives. We're moving the needle on health and making people healthier, not just providing emergency care. And we're doing it at a savings to the state. Again, we are coming in under budget. We're coming in bringing money back from the federal government to the state while doing all of this. So it's really a no-brainer. You know, no one's made a good argument as to why we shouldn't have a Medicaid expansion. It's our federal tax dollars that are going to fund this in other states. Why shouldn't the people of Louisiana enjoy the benefits of health care?
877-217-5757. We're visiting with Dr. Rebecca Gee. She is the Secretary of the Department of Health, the largest agency in Louisiana by a good bit, and she lives in New Orleans, commutes to Baton Rouge, is the mother of five children, and is a doctor. You still practice to some extent, don't you?
I do, and Jim, I have to get this in because it's so important. And so one of the things that we're seeing is so much flu this season. I think everyone's aware that this is one of the worst flu seasons that we've had, and we think 500,000 people will die worldwide this year because of this flu. It's a really nasty one. So need to put in a plug, as I would for my patients. You need to get your flu shot. Even if you haven't had it yet, it's not too late. We think this flu season may go out as far as March or April. Even if you've already had the flu, you could get a different strain. So definitely get your flu shot. You know, there's much less illness and death in communities where people get flu shots. We know this. You can go on ldh.la.gov/fight-the-flu. We are providing and have provided almost 3,000 free flu shots. So if you want to find out where to go for a free flu shot, you can go to any of our parish health units throughout the state until next Monday, the day before Mardi Gras. So we want you out catching bees, not the flu. So go get your flu shot. You know, it's not too late. And people are dying of this. So it's something to take seriously. And if you are sick, don't delay. If you are sick, let me stress that the first thing to do is not to go to an emergency room. Call your primary care doctor. Go to an urgent care. Get that flu test. You can get a swab in about 7 to 15 minutes. And you'll find out if you have the flu and you can take care of yourself. But definitely don't wait, because we've heard stories of, you know, children who waited and, you know, there have been deaths. So do, you know, obviously if you have shortness of breath or chest pain or those classic really scary symptoms, go to an emergency room. But do go to your doctor. Do go to an urgent care if you think you have the flu and get it taken care of.
Now, there have been reports that this particular vaccine has not been as effective as previous ones, but you're saying it's still a good idea.
It's still a good idea. I know what we're learning is the flu is a virus, right? And it changes even during the course of a year. It'll change the way that it's structured so that sometimes the vaccine is not as effective. But this one is effective for some viruses, and there's no downside to getting the flu vaccine as long as you're not allergic to eggs. So you really should be getting this vaccine. And of course, even if you do have an allergy, you can talk to your doctor about what your other options are. So,
all right, we are going to take a short break of 90 seconds. We'll return with Dr. Rebecca Gee, Secretary of the Department of Health on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Allie Baltazar is producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF, and Dr. Rebecca Gee is with us for a bit longer. The Secretary of the Department of Health and Hospitals for over 2 years now, the largest agency by a long shot in Louisiana. Q on I-10. Q, good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Gee. Hi, Q.
Hi. I wanted to ask, what measures, if any, have been taken to educate people, especially here in Louisiana, on the benefits of the flu shot and that the flu shot does not cause the flu? That's a lot of the excuses that I'm getting. Myself and my two toddlers, we got our flu shots. My husband and stepdaughter did not, so they got the flu and they were out for a week and a half. So I'm trying to educate people on the flu shot, and a lot of people are very afraid to get it because they have a lot of misinformation.
All right. Thank you, Q.
Doctor. Thank you so much. Well, part of it is Q, you being on this program saying that, and thank you for educating people. So, yes, I mean, the flu shot does not cause the flu. And we are educating people on our website. We've developed a messaging campaign where we're putting messages out through radio and through other venues, to public health units, to docs throughout the state. We've put out notices to providers. So, you know, we don't have a big budget for marketing, but what we do have, and we have a grant from the Centers for Disease Control, we're using that money to put out messages to the public. But definitely, the flu shot does not cause the flu. Probably the single most important invention in medicine that saved the most lives was the vaccine. So get your vaccine. If there is a vaccine for something, get it, because you'd much rather have a vaccine than have that illness. And again, this is a nasty flu. People are dying of the flu. People are getting very sick of this flu. So if you do have the strain that is in that flu vaccine, you're going to be very glad you got that shot.
877-217-5757 is your number. Still time to get in with Dr. Rebecca Gee. Now, for those who do have the flu or think they have the flu, what should they do?
So first of all, don't delay. Get your care. Go to your urgent care, go to your doctor. There's something called Tamiflu that you can take, and that reduces the severity of symptoms. It stops that virus from multiplying in your body. So absolutely, but if you wait too long, a couple days, it's too long. So go right away if you think you have the flu. Also make sure to drink plenty of fluids, take your temperature. You know, again, if you have a high fever, you need to be seen. Rest up, and don't go to work. Don't go out in public. Don't spread those germs around. Wash your hands. Use lots of Purell or antibacterial hand wash. And stay away from other people while you do have the flu.
Now, it's interesting you say that because there are people who say that we shouldn't use those hand sanitizers as much as we do, that we're not going to build up immunity. But with a flu outbreak, I would think it might be a good idea.
Yeah, not every day necessarily, Jim, but certainly if you're around people that have the flu or you have the flu, it's okay to kill some of those bacteria and viruses on your hands.
877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on Talk Louisiana with Dr. Rebecca Gee.
Good morning, Doctor, and good morning, Jim. Unfortunately, I've heard on some right-wing conspiratorial radio talk shows, a station and a program I won't mention, but they have had so-called experts on urging people do not get the flu shot. I believe one reason is it contains mercury, and this conspiratorial theory will really give you a migraine. It was a plot by the Obama administration to kill old people, so in order to save Social Security. Doctor, what would you say to this type of paranoid, insane behavior that people have
that
expressed?
That is paranoid and insane, and if you're listening to that station, maybe I ought to be listening to Jim instead. I mean, that's just dumb. That's just dumb. I mean, there were debates, you know, about thimerosal, which has a mercury component, and what is in vaccines. This does not have that. So, there's a lot of, you know, evidence, as I said, that the most important invention probably to human health was the vaccine. And so, you know, why would you not avail yourself of that if that's something that's going to save a life? So you just, I mean, sometimes people say crazy things. They say the sky is red or purple. Well, it's not. So sometimes, particularly when people have zero information or evidence for what they're saying, it's kind of hard to respond to it. You just have to look at the information. Centers for Disease Control has a great website about what are the side effects of the flu, what's in the vaccine. You can talk to your clinician or doctor. But, you know, this is a very safe vaccine, and it saves lives.
There are those, Dr. Gee, who you mentioned vaccinations, who think that vaccinations for children cause autism. It's a difficult discussion at times. I remember in a presidential debate 2 years ago, several candidates were saying this. How do you fight this misinformation?
Well, you just have to give people the truth. You have to study it. You know, one thing that came out yesterday was kind of an interesting article that we think that as many children have autism potentially from alcohol that parents are drinking, moms are drinking while they're pregnant. So there are a lot of things that we have to take serious, that there are things in the environment that can harm us. And we have to look at it and study it. But if the evidence shows that that's not true, then you need to move on. You know, so I think I'm an evidence person. I spent part of my career doing research and publishing the results of my research. And so I look to the research, and I believe what that says. And yet you have to get the right information. Make sure you go into a credible source, a source that's looking at real science, not just made-up facts. So another made up fact that's been shared a lot recently is that there's been a lot of discussion about the opioid epidemic. And some have said even that the opioid epidemic was caused by the Medicaid expansion, which is absolutely false.
Well, we're going to talk about that. And of course, the opioid crisis continues. More people are dying from opioid overdoses than they are in car wrecks or homicides, which is an amazing statistic, and one that Dr. Gee is addressing along with other healthcare professionals. Roger in Lafayette. Hi, Roger. You're on with Dr. Gee.
Hello. Thank you. This may have been addressed already. I'm sorry if I missed it, but can you please comment on the general fear of vaccines in general? There's a lot of fear over the years. The usual vaccines.
All right. Thank you, Roger.
So millions. So what I always say is if you're afraid of something, too, look at what the evidence shows you. So we know that millions and millions of people worldwide have had vaccines, and they've done just fine. You can look at the evidence in scientific reports and see that vaccines are safe. You know, there were discussions about some of the, not the vaccine itself, but some of the components that were in the vaccine that would keep them stable, you know, and whether those needed to be changed. And those, you know, vaccines, whatever the component was, it's called thimerosal, has largely been removed from vaccines. So vaccines are safe. and vaccines save lives. So again, I think there is anxiety, and of course, no one wants to have a situation where they have autism or things that they're dealing with. But you know, we have to be honest about what causes it, and sometimes we just don't know what causes certain things. But we do know for sure with vaccines that they're safe, and we know that because of millions and millions of people who have gotten vaccines in the literature that tells us that looked at the scientific evidence that they're safe.
As far as the opioid deaths being increased by the Medicaid expansion, your response to that claim?
Yeah, well, that's nonsense. You know, we've had in the past 4 years, the number of prescriptions have decreased by almost 800,000. In 2013, there were 5.7 million prescriptions. And in 2017, there were 4.9 million prescriptions. We also saw last year that the number of prescriptions went down by 25% since we implemented our pill limit. So one of the first things we did was we limited, and I get complaints all the time that we're being too strict, but we thought it was the right thing. We limited the number of days you can get, and we also limit the number of overall doses you can get. And that's had a profound impact. So this is something that we know because we have something called the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, and that is the total number of opioid prescriptions statewide. So we have a very good idea of how many prescriptions have gone out, and they absolutely have not increased with the Medicaid expansion. And
we're going to spend a bit more time with Dr. Rebecca Gee. Again, your number 877-217-5757. We'll talk more about the opioid crisis when we return after this news break on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. We have a few more minutes with Secretary Rebecca Gee, head of the Department of Health and Hospitals in Louisiana. 877-217-5757. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Bob in Lafayette. Bob, you're on the air with Secretary Gee.
Hi. I'm a psychiatrist who works in Lafayette. I do part-time work for one of the clinical-based mental health services, and we keep running into more and more obstructions with the different Medicaid programs. They have different formularies, different billing, and recently one of them has instituted monthly reviews for each patient by a licensed health professional, which takes up a ridiculous amount of time and costs the company money.
Dr. Gee?
Well, thank you for bringing up that. So one thing, unfortunately, last year our budget was cut, and in response to that, we had to cut mental health. And so some of what you're seeing is a response to the managed care plans getting cut. It was something we did not want to do, but unfortunately happened as part of budget cuts, number one. But number two is I am very aware, and we've talked about it, you know, as a practicing doc, I know how frustrating it is to have all of these different rules. And so we are working on first of all, we have reformed managed care. We have implemented new contracts with major modifications that put in big penalties for some of the non-payment and other issues that were happening. But we are also working towards a single provider enrollment system, a single drug list, so that you don't have so much complexity when looking to see what to prescribe for your patient. So we're certainly not there. But what I would say is, look, if you have any suggestions, you are absolutely welcome. My email is Rebecca, rebekah.gee@la.gov. You're absolutely welcome to reach out to me, email me, and let me know what we can do better. We are always trying to simplify. We have a long way to go, but you're absolutely right. We make it too difficult. It's been a big part of our efforts over the last 2 years, but there's so much more we can do. So, let us know how we can help.
As far as the opioid crisis, how significant is it right now?
Well, as you mentioned, Jim, it's more deaths than motor vehicle accidents, homicides combined. It's a very significant epidemic. A lot of it is people overdosing. You know, they start on opioids, they move on to heroin. So we really have a three-pronged approach. One is make sure that if you know anybody who has an addiction issue and is at risk for overdosing, make sure you have Narcan in your home. That's the antidote to dying from an opioid overdose. I wrote a statewide standing prescription. You don't need a prescription. Just go in. Written it for you. Anyone in the state can go get this. Number one. Number two, make sure that your loved one or you get treatment. There are all kinds of treatments. You may need to be on some lifelong medicine, but that's okay. You know, this is a disease just like diabetes, just like heart disease that needs to be treated. Don't stay alone. Don't wait to get treated. And then the third thing that we're really doing is focusing on making sure that we know where the addiction issue is, where people are dying, so we can target first responders. You know, there's a lot that needs to be done. We're getting a handle on it. But, again, this problem happened because the market has just been flooded with these drugs. You heard me say that there were now less than 5 million, but there used to be over 5 million prescriptions. We're a state of not 5 million people. So we had, you know, more prescriptions than every man, woman, and child in the state of Louisiana. That has caused some significant harm. So we're going to be dealing with this problem for a very long time.
Well, you mentioned you were in a horrific accident, almost died, and your first husband did. I was in a car accident 14 years ago and almost died. And I can tell you, I took a lot of opioids for a few days. Why do some people get hooked and others don't?
The same reason some people pick up a cigarette and, you know, have a lifelong addiction, and others just think it's gross. Or, you know, people get addicted to alcohol and others don't. It's genes. It's genetic. It's how your makeup is. And so I think the sooner we understand that, the less we need to get away from this stigma of just blaming people for having this problem. You know, a lot of kids, you know, we've seen the story over and over again. The high school football star gets an injury, takes some opioids, you know, overdoses and dies. This is not, you know, this is not a human failing. This is a gene. It's some people are just very prone to addiction. Others are not. And we need to help people. And we need to stop focusing on blaming the victims, because frankly, a lot of this problem was caused by the pharmaceutical industry that pushed these pills on everybody. I mean, it was the fifth vital sign. It was, you know, they lied about how many people would get addicted if they took these pills. And, you know, we're now fighting. We have a lawsuit about this issue because, frankly, the company that benefited greatly from this, Purdue and some of these other companies, ought to pay for this. How come the state taxpayer should have to pay for all the costs of treating this and all the issues? They should help us pay to solve this problem. So this is just, it's a big issue, but it's not the fault of the person who's addicted. What we need to focus on is how to get people help.
Another health crisis in your life was with your mother. She died young with breast cancer. I think you were 16. Is that correct?
That's right. Yes, she was 46.
How did that affect you?
So that's why I do what I do. I became a doctor because of her. And, you know, that's why the Medicaid expansion means so much to me. Now, we've had over 20,000 women get mammograms. We've picked up almost 300 breast cancers in women who, prior to an expansion, would not have had any primary care. They would have just had the emergency room to go to. So that means a lot to me. And that's, when I wake up every day, that's what makes doing this job worth it, is I'm saving other, you know, children. They don't have to go through what I did with losing their moms, because, you know, medical care and primary care matters. It matters to families to have insurance. That makes a big difference in their lives. And I learned that from my mom.
And when your mother died, she left you 12 letters?
Yes. Yeah. So more than that. So until I was 30, I would open a letter every year. From my dad would send letters in a FedEx envelope and write what her dreams were for me. So while she was dying, she wrote out wishes for my 18th birthday, my 21st birthday, you know, it was wonderful. It was a sweet, sweet reminder of how much she loved me.
I'm told one of them got lost, though.
Yeah. When I moved, I was in college, and in the summer I stored my stuff and got lost in a box. It was pretty remarkable that she did that. I don't know if I could, you know, if you're dying and you're going through that, that's a pretty emotional thing to sit down and write, but they're certainly very special to have.
And you have lived in many places in this country, born in Utah, educated in Massachusetts, or you live in Louisiana. How do you compare the places where you have been?
Louisiana is the happiest place. Louisiana's got it, got the best deal. Mika, listen, I think one of the reasons, and we've talked about opioids, but we don't have nearly as bad of an opioid problem as a Kentucky or a West Virginia, because we have each other. We have festivals here. We celebrate life. We have fabulous food. Now Louisiana has an enduring culture that is recognized worldwide for being one of the most interesting and rich cultures, you know, on the face of the earth. That's why people want to come here. And, you know, this is a wonderful place to be. I feel very fortunate to have landed. I haven't been born here, but I now have children who have been born here. So I hope I deserve the at least being adopted.
Yeah, well, I think so. But we do have a problem with, you mentioned the food, Dr. Gee. We eat too much of it. We've got a very heavy population, and obesity is a huge factor in health care in this country and in our state.
That's right. I mean, it's tough. It's tough because the food's so good, but everything in moderation. As long as you don't eat too much of it, you got to exercise every day or nearly every day, you'd be fine. But, you know, it's tough because the food's so darn good.
You take care of yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I try to. I do exercise most days, and, you know, I run around after a lot of kids, so we keep it going. But it's tough because, but my rule is to cut out your sugars, don't drink soda, don't drink a lot of juice, you know, try to drink water, you know, don't eat a lot of fried food, do it as a treat, you know, and try to cut out potatoes, and you know, you can, as long as you do things once in a while, you'd be fine.
Well, we thank you for
but
joining
if you do
us.
Do it every day, you know, that's when you get in trouble.
Well, yeah, you have to stay diligent, there's no doubt about it, and time is a big factor, and you of all people have to make time for it.
Well, you know, our health is the most important thing to us. You know, if we don't have our health, we don't have much else. So it's important to focus on. And, of course, as health secretary, I'm a little biased.
Okay. A listener asked about the website again for the flu shots. Can you give the website again?
Yes. It's LDH, like Louisiana Department of Health, .la.gov/fighttheflu. And if you have trouble with the fight the flu, then just go to ldh.la.gov and in the search engine put flu, and then you can find out where to get your free flu shot. Again, until Monday, any of our parish health units, we have 64 of them, you can go there and get your flu shot, but make sure you go when they're open. So go ahead and check our ldh.la.gov/fighttheflu to get more information about where to go and when.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Rebecca Gee, Secretary of the Department of Health and Hospitals.
Thanks, Jim. Stay dry and happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras. Thank you.
Okay.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And we're about to be joined by Mary Stein, and she'll be talking about what's going on with the East Baton Rouge Parish Library. There's some major events this February, as in this month, and also we're going to talk about what's happening downtown. We've got a beautiful facility, the main library on Goodwood, but soon there will be a skyscraper library in downtown Baton Rouge at the old site. That quaint facility has blossomed. We'll talk about that and more. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 877-217-5757. Back with more Talk Louisiana after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Ellie Baltazar is our producer, and your number is 877-217-5757. Mary Stein is with us. She is the assistant director of the East Baton Rouge Parish Library System. She's been with her entity for 34 years. I knew her back in the day at Louisiana State University.
That's
it's been
right.
A long time. Soon we're also going to hear from a librarian, Samantha Belmont, but I understand they're right at 300,000 library patrons.
That's right.
That's people with cards?
Those are people with current cards. There's no dead cards in that list of 300,000.
300,000, that's a lot of people.
And 100,000 of those people have used their card in the last 12 months, so that's pretty good.
That is something. Well, I saw a story last month in The Advocate by Andrea Gallo, and the headline says, Baton Rouge Library is taking cues from retail. What are you doing?
Well, that's exactly right. We have to think of ourselves and use the same psychology that retail entities use, because we have customers, and they have other choices. So we have to make sure that we anticipate their needs, meet their needs, and market that we're meeting those needs, because libraries are not just boxes of books anymore.
Well, I recall your old location on Goodwood. I liked it, but it had some wear and tear. You're smiling. You like the new one a little better, don't
I think
you?
A little bit.
A little bit better. Well, the new one is a showplace.
It is, and people come every day. More than 1,500 people come every day. Some of them just come to hang out and sit and use the rooms, go to meetings and programs. Some use the facilities. The local history is booming. The Career Center is booming. The digital lab is booming. Business is good, Jim.
But 300,000 people in Baton Rouge have library cards, right at 300,000 people. Any particular age group? Do older people tend to have library cards more?
Yes. And a lot of that is because the moms or the dads have the cards for the younger ones. So the younger ones may be using the library but don't have their own card. But let me tell you, we'll make more cards. So we're inviting you. Just because 300 people have it, don't think we're running out. We're like that old commercial, eat all you want, we'll make more.
And there's no age limit.
That's
either
right.
way, right?
That's right. You know, just this week, I was watching the Super Bowl and checking the tweets, and somebody tweeted out their baby was a day old and they had just got their library card. So I was like, you go.
Well, you got to be 35 to be president of the United States, but you can get a library card a lot younger than
that's
35.
That's right, because we love to share.
Okay. What about the downtown experience? There's this booming construction project going on.
That's right, and it's really taking shape because now it has a skin that the metal skin is going to go on very soon. Parts of it are actually started. The windows are almost all in, and then it really looks like a building. And inside, of course, I've been in, and the views from every floor are magnificent. But more importantly, the spaces inside, we did our best to take everything that was good from the new main library and the renovated Bluebonnet and put those same features in the downtown library so that it will have the meeting rooms, the casual spaces and the maker room. So exciting.
Well, for a city our size, we've got a lot of library power, not only from the city, but we've got the state library.
That's
we've
right.
got some other, we've got the LSU and
LSU
Southern
and
libraries.
Southern, right.
So there's no excuse not to find a book if you're looking for it.
That's right, and it's free. You know, you're leaving money on the table if you don't take advantage of all the things we offer.
That's the operative word, free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's going to be quite a place. When will it open?
Well, we hope to take possession of the building in the fall, and then there's a long punch list, and then move the furniture in late fall and get the computers all hooked up. Whether or not it would be open as a Christmas present or as a Three Kings Day present, I can't tell you.
So within a year,
oh yes,
the downtown library should be open.
Oh yes.
And there were those who said, look, we've got enough. We don't need this. It's a waste of money.
But I think the fact that people are using us and continuing to use us and reinvent how they're using us belies that.
Okay. Well, coming this month, as in February, and one event this week is called the Microcon, the first ever mid-city Microcon. What's going to happen with this?
Well, this is our we're dipping our toe in the water for Comic-Con. This is something we've been thinking about for several years, and it's Black History Month, and there's been a lot of talk about diversity in literature, and so the thought was, well, let's talk about diversity in comics. And there's some serious panels taking place. There's some fun things taking place. There will, of course, be cosplay, so you can dress up in your cape and your leotard, but family-friendly, of course. Mm-hmm. But we have some wonderful people coming in from all over. They've been so excited to share their creations. And the creators of the Tuskegee Airs are coming. The Carver, Samantha has all the details about the Carver, Kid Carvers. And wonderful things for all ages to share. Also free, Saturday 10 to 5. So there's a wonderful list of panels, and some things are things where you could learn and empower yourself to be your own creator.
Mm-hmm. Now, Samantha Belmont, who is a librarian, is here, and I know you're excited about MicroCon.
Yeah, this is an event that we've been working on for a while. This is the first time we've attempted a comic book convention at the library, and one thing that we've really done that sets it apart from some other comic book conventions is we're really focusing on celebrating diversity of fans, creators, and characters. So you're going to see a wide range. We really want to focus on the fact that comic books are for everyone, and everyone can find themselves in the comic book community.
That's Saturday, as in February 10th. And what time do you get started?
We're starting at 10 a.m. and go until 5 p.m.
10 to 5, and it's at the main
library
location
in Goodwood.
On
that's
Goodwood,
right.
7711 Goodwood. And also, you are promoting this year's One Book, One Community edition. It's a launch party celebrating Hidden Figures.
That's right. And also talking about diversity in themes of the hidden stories of America and beyond. So this, of course, is the story of the women who were the human computers at NASA. There is a wonderful movie. There's a book. There's a young reader's version of the book. We have hundreds of copies out in the community, in libraries and elsewhere. And we will kick it off with a launch party. We will be playing music from the 60s. There will be Jell-O. There will be moon pies. We will have tater tots and sloppy joes. We will have some NASA STEM teens coming up from Michoud. We're going to have wonderful STEM-y stuff to do. So it'll be interactive. And of course, there's caricatures and face painting and balloons for the kids. So all ages, there'll be something there for the littles and grandparents and everything in between.
That's February 24th, 2 weeks from this Saturday.
That's right.
It'll be the launch party for Hidden Figures. And a listener, this is Holly asking, how is the selection made for the One Book, One Community edition every year?
Well, what we do is, first of all, we look at what we read last year. We try to do something a little bit different. We make sure that it is accessible and engaging. I mean, we've done some of the classics, of course, but now we're kind of branching out. Usually we look for fiction, but in this case, it read so much like a wonderful story that it worked. Just like when we did Kingfish, it reads like fiction, and that worked for us. We're particularly looking for a book that represented a different viewpoint, and that's why Hidden Figures was just the perfect choice. I love it when there's also a movie, because we have a lot of people that won't read, and then, or at least the movie helps them be better readers, and we always look for a book that we can also get in large print or in audio or an ebook format so that people have different ways to engage.
And you mentioned the Richard White book about Huey Long, The Kingfish.
That was such a fun book.
Yeah, it was, and I think as time goes by, it's interesting that people forget about what an impact Huey Long had on our state then and now. Jim in Denham Springs, you're on the air with Mary and Samantha. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to point out that Batgirl was a librarian, which makes librarians just that much more cool, and why, hey, the Comic-Con thing is a great idea.
Thank you. Batgirl is one of my all-time favorite superheroes.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure she'll be there, or at least her headband will be.
Well, thank you, Jim. That's a great insight. Batgirl.
That's right.
Remember Batgirl on television?
That's right.
Yvonne Craig.
Oh, wonderful. She's our hero.
We'll go ahead.
And then when you think about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it all took place in the library, didn't it?
It did. So a lot of things are happening in the library. Mm-hmm. Do you still go around going, shh?
Never, shh. Never. People shush me, but I don't shush them.
What about cell phones, though? I tell you what, I was in a library in Los Angeles a few weeks ago, and my cell phone went off, and you would have thought the earth, there was an earthquake. People were not happy.
We're a little bit more relaxed. The thing is, if you're on your cell phone yelling, that's disturbing whether you were on your cell phone or not. So it's if you're speaking quietly, we're fine.
Okay. Well, this Saturday at the main library, 7711 Goodwood Boulevard, there is the first ever Mid-City MicroCon. And then 2 weeks from Saturday, the One Book, One Community launch party, it starts
at 6.
6 p.m.
That's
so this
right,
is a
after
nighttime,
hours.
Nighttime affair.
That's right.
Celebrating Hidden Figures, which is quite a book, and it celebrates women in science, which mm-hmm. is quite important. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you,
Samantha.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.